Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, Lisa O'Sullivan here to introduce the next episode of Spin the Rally Pod here on Dirtfish.com. Now, this is a two-hander, as they say in the trade. Let me paint you something of a picture. Why not think of Thelma and Louise heading out on the Italian roads? Because Dirtfish.com senior staff writer David Evans and the voice of Rally himself, Colin Clark, have been let loose to take in the resumption of the rallying action in Italy. After 12 days on the road taking in the Rally di Roma Capitale and the Rally di Alba, they've taken some time to sit down and relive the action that they've enjoyed over in Italy. Now, I need to apologise on David's behalf for some rather appalling microphone handling issues at the beginning. Bad boy, David. And I also need to warn you that they have threatened to sing in the podcast, so be ready to hit that stop button when you need to.
Are we recording now?
David.
Are we?
Yes.
Should I put some Italian music on?
No.
Shall I? Oh. But what would happen is that, can I put some, what was that thing we were listening to?
I have some Italian
music. Oh, I can't do it because the, forget it.
Forget it.
Should we sing?
No, we'll definitely not sing. There's been a bit of singing this week, though, hasn't
there? Oh, there has.
A little bit too much singing, perhaps.
Too much singing. Quite tired now as well. Been a long... Are we actually recording now?
We aren't recording, David. We have been for the last minute or two, yeah.
Oh.
Right, well, it's podcast. David, we got to apologise, haven't we, for missing a week's podcast. Really, yeah, very...
That was
very,
your job.
It was my job, but you know, we have been quite ridiculously busy.
We have.
But in the best possible way. The best possible way.
Absolutely the best possible way. You know, for... excuse me, sorry.
What are you doing cleaning your throat, David?
I should have done that before.
Don't want to hear
all right,
that.
Shut up. Since March, we have done nothing in terms of competing on events or following competition on events. And then suddenly, two rallies in 2 weeks. That's been pretty epic, hasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it was back to rallying, wasn't it? So let's just let the listeners know where we've been. The first rally we went to
Don't say it in that really ridiculous fashion. Rally di Roma Capitale. Oh God, that's one very
Rally
thin.
Di Roma Capitale.
So you had to
Rally di Roma Capitale. It was the first, and this is quite remarkable. It was the first major rally, the first international rally that we've seen really since Rally Mexico. You absolutely look quite ridiculous. You can't wear a headset. You were never going to be in the Navy or the RAF or anything.
You want to look at yourself.
You might have just about managed the call centre for, I don't know, BT or something like that.
So, indeed, we went to Rome first. Rome.
We did. We went
just to recap.
So it was the first round. And what did we work out? We worked out, didn't we? 134 days or
132.
Something? 132 days since the final day. That was the Saturday. At Rally Mexico.
Yeah.
Without any international rallying. And then we were back. And, you know, it did look a little different, didn't it? You know, certainly from our point of view as media people, it looked a little bit different. It was around the ERC.
Yeah, in fairness, you know, before we had gone there, there was a huge amount of form filling, passport numbers, you know, the whole nine yards. We had to be in touch with Matteo, the fabulous press officer at Rally di Roma Capitale.
Rally di Roma,
no. We will fall
Capitale.
Out.
I'm loving the Italian. I really am.
There was a lot of form filling. There was a lot of bureaucracy to go through.
Yes.
And at times it was very tedious.
But
then, why was it tedious for you? I did it for all three of us. You did nothing. You literally rocked up and took the pages out of my hand. So it was, there was a lot of form filling. it was entirely worthwhile because when we got there, you know, we walked into Rally HQ to get our accreditation, and there was numerous checks to go through before. You know, it wasn't quite as stringent as it clearly is in Formula One. That's something that I do have a little bit of an issue with, that, you know, if you've got to be that stringent in international motorsport in Formula One, it goes back to Appendix S, doesn't it? You know, if we either embrace it or we don't.
Let me tell you, I disagree with that. I disagree with that.
Well, you're wrong then.
No, I'm not.
Wrong.
Okay, maybe I am wrong.
He's been wrong for
12
days.
But the standards that you set in terms of, for football, for example, for returning to competitive football, returning to football with crowds for a Premier League game, will be quite different, and it has to be if you want to see everything return at all levels. Let me finish. You cannot expect Sunday League football, and I'm not comparing ERC, ERC and Formula One and Sunday League and Premier League, but you know you do have different levels for. It's economically it has to be viable,
right? So you're essentially prioritizing an economic issue over the health issue.
Me, but I think your point you were going to make, you didn't make, you missed
because
out,
you didn't
was
allow
that there's
to.
No testing. No, I did allow you.
There
to.
Wasn't any testing, and that's my point. Is
but,
that?
But
is
what's
that,
the
no,
testing bill for Formula One?
It's enormous, but that's not the point, Colin. You are either taking coronavirus completely seriously, doing all you can to protect all of the people in the big bubble that is either
all
Formula One.
All you can is the sentence.
Don't interrupt. Or international rallying. We're not. We're doing a bit. We're doing all we can. No, we're not. Why aren't we testing then?
Because we don't have £1 million per event.
So
to
therefore,
spend.
We shouldn't be going. We're
well,
not
there,
doing.
There is the choice you have.
But it's not our choice to make. It's the governing body's choice to make. Surely the FIA should be saying, if this is the way we do it with Formula One, WRC International Rally media personnel, everybody in the service block is just as valuable. Their lives mean just as much. Therefore, that is what we have to do in international rallying. You can't say. These people are more important. They have to be tested more than these people. It's, you know, to me, that is a bit of a nonsense.
I don't think it's saying anyone's more important than anyone else.
Yeah, but by inference, of course
perhaps,
they are.
Perhaps there is oversensitivity and over-regulation in certain elements.
No, because that's the clearest, most defined way to contain the pandemic, the virus, isn't it? You know, course it is, because you continually test people. You and I could have been running around for 2 weeks with coronavirus.
There aren't many work environments that I know where you're being tested every day before, or every 2 days, or every 3 days.
But that's
at work.
What they're doing in Formula One, so why aren't they doing it in WRC?
My point, maybe they've gone a little bit over the top in Formula One.
Right, let's park this discussion. We have got far more interesting things to discuss than coronavirus testing.
You always do this. When you don't agree with me,
you're wrong.
Just want to park it.
Yeah, no, I'm doing it for your benefit, because you're wrong, and we'll just move on. So he did. If people...
Anyway, let's get back to Rome and the back to rallying. I thought it was great. I thought it was a great success.
They did well.
I think Rome did well. I think
Rome was
we have
quiet,
to say Bruno Di Pianto.
Rome was quiet.
What
Rome
was quiet?
Rome. Were you there? Italy was quiet.
In
nobody
terms
here.
Of the actual, you know, tourists.
Yeah, nobody here.
It was remarkable.
Very, very sad.
Really very sad.
Very sad.
But the rally itself.
Good. Yeah, we've done. Have we not? Oh, no, we didn't do a podcast, did we? You just said
we
that.
We didn't. Motorsport Italia did a great job in putting that event on. And, you know, it was a really pretty good entry list at the end of the day.
It was
wasn't
a great
it?
Entry list.
You know, we had World Rally Cars. We had people like Young Solberg. We had Breen. Mm. And then we had the support act of the likes of Luca Nuke and the others.
Mm.
And it was.
What was it?
It
mean,
was entertaining.
One of my issues, though, Colt, is, you know, it's been a while since I've been to an ERC round. What was the depth of the ERC entry? You know, the likes of Basso, Crignola, these kind of guys, are they going to do...
No, Basso, Crignola, you know, are locals.
Italian
are
championships,
good locals.
Aren't they?
Yeah, exactly. No, they're not just good, they're very good locals.
Yeah, no, absolutely, but they are probably focused there on the Italian championship.
100%.
There. And this is the perennial question of who is doing ERC? Where is the depth in that championship? You know, I mean, that Rome, the event, the organisers of the event did a blinding job. It was a great rally, worthy of... European Rally Championship status, but I still would like to know the general sort of direction. You know, we need to talk more about ERC. We need to talk to the organisers of the championship. I don't understand where it goes, and I'd love to talk
Didn't
more.
Didn't want to talk to us in Rome, did they?
They weren't very keen.
I'm still waiting for a response to a question I asked them. A really pertinent question.
It was jolly pertinent question.
Never got a
reply. Still waiting. But maybe it's not, you know, we should talk to Jerome Roussel. Fabulous.
And see whether it's working. See whether it's working. Because there was this very much this...
Just to say, Jerome Roussel is the man who overarches, looks after all of the FIA regional championships. Yeah. My point, just to make it very quickly before you come back, is that we need to know where do all of these regional championships fit in. Are they feeder series? Are they standalone to WRC?
Well, feeder series is what it's supposed to be about, isn't it? It's supposed to be part of this ladder of opportunity. You start your juniors in the junior ERC. You know, they move and progress into the senior ERC, and from there, supposedly, into WRC. But that's not what we're seeing.
No,
we're not seeing that. We definitely saw that. And I hark back to this because I enjoyed the IRC, and there was some great, but it was a different setup. It was a different model entirely. But in the IRC days, you wouldn't have to argue that it was a feeder series for the WRC because it was patently obvious. They were, you know, certainly in the two or three years, in the two or three best years of the IRC, you know, we had the likes of Neville, we had Mickelson, we had many other drivers feeding through into the WRC. And, you know, when they scrapped that and tried to revive the ERC, there was a very clear raison d'etre. I'm not sure that as yet that they're winning. And I'll tell you why I don't think they're winning. Because I don't think the drivers and young drivers, I think the what they're being offered in the WRC is too strong. You know, the junior WRC, the WRC2, is too strong. Why would you go and spend money in the ERC to do rallies that will never,
be in the WRC,
when perhaps only for a few extra quid, you can do
we talked to a few people about this exact question, and the answer is that, you know, there is a good promotional package around the ERC. You know, they have a wonderful platform, don't they, to produce good television.
I think it's television. Now, I wouldn't necessarily say a good promotional package, but you can't argue with television. It's a good television offering.
No, absolutely. You're dead right there. But as a young driver, you have to make that choice. You know, Chris Ingram, ERC champion last year, where is he? You know, he's disappeared. He is nowhere on the WRC. We talk to the team managers all the time. Never have I heard Andrea Adamo talk about Chris Ingram. Why is that?
Never once.
You know, how is that? And as a young driver, you make that choice. You either try to get your name up in lights on television, which is great for your sponsors. It brings a heap of cash in, potentially. Or you do the hard yards in WRC, where it is harder because, you know, the competition is arguably greater, and it's perhaps harder to get the same profile because there isn't quite the same promotion of JWRC, of WRC 2 and 3.
You do, and it does beg the question, you know, if there was...
And I said promotion again then. That was wrong. There isn't the same television coverage.
There is good promotion in WRC. Yeah. It is. And television coverage, you know, I've worked in marketing. I've got a moderate understanding of how marketing works. Television coverage is very old school, but there are still some very old school marketing directors, chief executive officers, who are signing off budgets. And really, what they're interested in is television coverage. And that's why the ERC... I think is maintaining a certain level. It does offer massive television exposure in terms of the hours. I couldn't tell you what the audience is. But the question that I think all of this raises is if we had decent TV coverage for the Junior World Rally Championship, the WRC2 Championship, you know, you would blow everything else out of the water. Every youngster that had half a budget
would be heading
towards the WRC. And the other question I think that has to be considered is, you know, in this post-COVID environment that we're all
anticipating. Are we post-COVID? Are we mid-COVID?
We're nowhere near post-COVID yet, but in the post-COVID environment that we're going to emerge into, you know, is there room? Is there really room for two major championships?
Well, ERC is not a major championship, is it?
It is kind of. It kind of presents
itself. Well, yeah, it does. You know, European champion means a lot, doesn't it? You know, it is.
Why have you moved your chair? Why have you moved your chair to face me?
It's just a bit more comfortable.
Yeah, okay. Oh, but just to let you know where we are, folks, we're in David's room. It's a nice room.
But in the hotel.
In the hotel, of course.
Not in my bedroom. And we're in Milan, and we're going home tomorrow.
So let's just finish up.
Rome. We've kind of done Rome. It was great. you know, highlights the talking Roy. Points.
Yeah.
Breen on MRFs.
Great, great day for Breen.
Cricket and Michelin.
Yeah.
You know, superb effort by MRF. Obviously, Solberg. Brilliant.
Strong drive.
Super strong drive. First time on asphalt, despite what these people are saying about Monte Carlo being a tarmac rally. It is and it isn't. And Pierre-Louis Loubet. Mm. Superb in a World Rally Car on his debut. And even stronger in Alba, according to Mr. Adamo.
Well, you know what? Pierre-Louis Loubet, absolutely one of the stars, I think, of the past 12 days or so. Mm. You know,
was I a star of the last 12 days?
You had your moments, David.
Did I?
Yeah, no, you had your moments, yeah. Yeah, we had a particularly good rendition of Always Look on the Bright Side of Life.
Yeah. No, the best one was definitely Band-Aid.
Oh, Band-Aid.
That was the highlight.
Yes.
That was definitely the highlight.
Yeah, always good to have a Christmas song in the middle of summer.
Absolutely.
Puts anyone
and it has
listening.
Been very, very, very hot. Dear goodness.
What a relief we've had today. Today it's been raining.
Bit of
it's
rain.
Been cool. It's been lovely.
So we moved from Rome. Just you've got one chance. One chance to get this right. What was the name of the place we stayed in?
Fuji.
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 You're
rubbish. It was a lovely place I liked.
It was a lovely place.
Lovely place. A lovely hotel. Lovely people.
That wire's just come out. Is that important?
Oh, no. That wire's not. No, it's never in.
Sorry. Moving on. So we left Fuji. Don't laugh at your own jokes. We left Fuji, which it was just on the southeast corner of Rome.
Yeah.
And we headed
not corner, it was southeast of Rome.
Yeah, it was a long way out, wasn't it? Yeah. And we headed north.
We did.
To Siena.
We did.
We did, which was amazing. And the reason we went to Siena was because in the Piazza del Campo, it was exactly where they parked Group B cars. Essentially, it was a bit of a Group B trip, wasn't it?
It was.
It was a pilgrimage to Group B, if you like.
It was a nostalgic
odyssey.
Through the Group B and San Remo days, wasn't it?
Yes.
San Remo rally days. So we went to, as you say, Siena because it was a regroup for the San Remo rally.
Yeah.
We then went to San Gimignano, which was also... a regroup for the San Remo rally, the gravel stages of the San Remo rally.
Mm.
But then I think one of the highlights for me was then driving that stage, which
name
escapes me. But,
you
know, there's debate as to just how much gravel there is left in Tuscany. It appears there's quite a lot. We managed to drive more or less all of that stage.
Yeah.
And you could see why.
But, it sparked a debate that has actually run through this week. And we've spoken to now, you know, to Fabrizio Pons and to lots and lots of people.
What was the debate? What was your assertion?
Well, my feeling was, having spoken to a lot of people. It was.
Strong assertion.
Yeah. But I had been told that it was not possible for San Remo Rally, WRC round, to come back to Tuscany and San Remo because there's not enough gravel. For that reason of, you know, all of these farmhouses have now been... converted into places for rich people from all over Europe to go. And so, and these people don't want rally cars ripping by their front door.
On top of that, there's the greens.
I thought we weren't going to mention those. We weren't going to mention them.
No, we have to mention them because Adamo mentioned them.
Yeah. There is a significant green issue lobby in Tuscany. So I said that. I might have mentioned that it wouldn't be happening again. And it sparked a little bit of controversy. And some people disagreed. They're entitled to. Obviously, they're wrong as well. But actually, they might be right. And it would turn out that, having spoken to the lovely Gianluca... What was his surname again?
Nataloni.
Nah, Gianluca Nataloni. Lovely fella. The most poshest sounding Italian. Unbelievable.
I question whether he's Italian.
Well, he certainly has a style of an Italian.
Oh, he's got
but he has the accent of the home county.
He's unmistakably Italian, but then he's questionably Italian at the same time. How can you have the two? Is that what they call a juxtaposition?
It is, but or a contradiction, is it? I don't know. Yeah, but he had a sort of Italian man bag thing going on, which you've sported one of those all week.
I rock with the odd man bag occasionally. Yeah.
So there was that debate that kind of went on a bit, and then from. Where were we? San Gimignano. We then decided we were going to go.
You're just finishing the debate there.
Yeah. There's not a lot. I'm kind of tired of talking about all of that. I really, really enjoy Alghero, Sardinia. But oh my goodness, wouldn't it be awesome if it came back to Siena and around there, you know, Milan, Turin. This, for me, this is, we are in the heart absolute heartland of Italian rallying here.
Well, this is something I found a bit sad about our trip. A bit, really, and genuinely a bit sad. There were two elements I found very, very sad. One was that, you know, this was absolutely the heartland of Italian rallying. And there's such passion, and there was such innovation, and there was such beauty came out of this area, particularly the Torino-Turin area. And there's now practically nothing. Practically nothing. Apart from the passion. The passion is still
there. It's still here, absolutely.
You know, the other thing is we went to the old Fiat building, and remind me of the name of that again.
Lingotto. Yeah, but we've skipped ahead.
No, but I'm including the two in this one point I want to make.
I thought we were going to do it in kind of order of our trip. Yeah.
All right, okay. Well, so far I'm just going to say then that I'm upset, and I found it, not upsetting, but I found it, what was the word I was using earlier? The good word for it. It's not upsetting, but it's just a little bit sad. Sad. It's just sad.
It's not a hard word to remember, is it?
Not a hard word to remember, really. It's sad. Sad that, you know, once great rally nation now is struggling.
Yeah, and genuinely was, but we'll get to that. We departed San Gimignano.
Yeah, we did.
And we headed... going to go, which is a shame, wasn't it? Because we did that extra stage on the morning, but then we were going to go to Imola. And we were going to go to Maranello.
I always question this itinerary.
Ah, yeah, but honestly,
I think you were planning on a helicopter. I genuinely think you were planning on a helicopter.
I was.
Planned the itinerary.
In the end, we skipped those, and we decided to head straight to San Remo.
We did.
So we drove essentially, we drove the road section all the way back, right around the coast.
Through
Genoa.
Genoa we went through.
Yeah, through there. Had some interesting moments with mopeds. And... into San Remo, straight to the Royal Hotel, which is an absolute part of...
You're going to tell us the story again. You've told it 14 times already this
No,
week.
I'm not going to tell
it. One of the first times you went to the Royal Hotel. What happened round the back?
No, I'm not telling...
What happened round the back of the Royal Hotel?
I'm not going to tell you.
Oh, come on. No. You've got to tell us the story.
No.
When you were a young pup.
I'm not going to tell...
A pub reporter, whatever they call
them. If the listeners want to know, they can... How would they get in touch?
It was a story involving Carlos Sainz and the wonderful David Williams.
Yeah, well,
and a very starstruck young David Evans.
Yeah,
anyway, that's what to say.
So essentially, that was it.
Yeah, and we stayed at the Lolly Hotel next door.
Yeah, that was that was a bit of a dump.
No, it wasn't. I had it was a tight room, but it was quite nice, and the bathroom was brand new.
Mine was grim.
When your credit card comes out, you've always got the right to ask for the best room.
Well,
you didn't.
Yeah. No, I didn't.
I got in there first.
I didn't, but I definitely had the best room in San Gimignano.
San Gimignano, you did.
That's looking out straight over the countryside. But yeah, no, Lolly, whatever. It wasn't much of a palace. It was a bit of a dump. But
you can't say that.
No, we can't. If you're listening, Lolly Palace people, tidy it up, please.
The breakfast was grim,
wasn't it? I mean, dear Lord. That orange juice should not be that colour. That's not normal. I've never seen an orange
what
that colour. What could it was fluorescent? If you turned the lights out, it would have glowed in the dark. So
it was a nuclear option.
It was. But actually, we've gone too far. You've taken us to breakfast the night before. Where did we go?
We went up to San Romolo.
But how did we get there?
We went up the Calderodi stage.
Yeah,
a stage that was.
We do go on a bit about great bits of road and blah blah blah. That was an amazing piece of road. I can't remember the last time I drove it, but it's overgrown, it's bumpy, it's clearly two-way. We had a fairly significant moment when we thought it was one-way. Turns out it's two-way.
assertion again. I like that word this evening.
And
this has to be a one-way road call. This is the one where I'm sure it can't possibly be, two-ways.
That woman clearly was not expecting us to come around that corner.
It's quite funny when you got overtaken by the woman in the Fiat Uno.
She was on a mission.
Then absolutely mullered you up the hill. You couldn't give up with it.
Well, I couldn't. Despite the fabulous Hyundai Tucson supplied by Hyundai.
Not an N.
Thank you very much. Yeah, it wasn't an N. We were sort of promised a Hyundai Tucson N, but the N fell off, and it was. But it was very good. It got us around 12 days of travel. And San Romolo.
Yeah, we got there up the Calderodi.
Ristorante da Lava.
What was the Calderodi probably? What's the most infamous? It was probably burnt. I don't know, but certainly in recent years it was Burns, wasn't it? When he in the Subaru when he
crashed
1 kilometer in.
Basically. That couldn't have been Calderodi, though.
It was Calderodi, wouldn't it?
It couldn't, because if he crashed 1 kilometre in, he would have ended up on the motorway.
Well, sometimes it started just a bit above the motorway. It's not always started
I don't think it was called Rodi.
I
don't think it was, because it was a much more wide open junction that they slid wide. No, it was in that area San Romolo. Robert, are you listening to this, Robert Reed? If you are, pick up the phone and tell us. Please keep us right.
Is that
a phone?
I thought it was someone banging on the wall because you're being too noisy. Shh. Might be.
It's quite late. It's now 10:30. We probably have to wrap it up.
It's early for us though, isn't it?
It's been long days. Long days. So, Ristorante de Lava.
Fantastic. Davide de Lava. 3 times Italian...
motorbike thing.
Yeah, what is it they call it though? Enduro champion. Yeah. Really nice guy. Really lovely guy.
Also, and just, you know, the most amazing collection. We probably do have to skip it along a bit now. Pictures of just about every rally start in the history of time.
Skip it along a bit now. Yeah. You're just telling me.
I'm quite tired now. You do sap a lot of energy from people spending 12 days with you has been quite tedious at times.
I've given you
great food. Great food. You remember the food in that place?
Really good food.
Fabulous food. Really enjoyed it. If you are in the San Remo or even Nice, it's not that far.
It's a great trip up there, and you know, Davide, if he's there, he'll give you a little walk around. I mean, the memorabilia that's in there, the photos, the signed photos.
Yeah. Literally everybody has been in there.
Every world champion has been there.
Yeah. It's genuinely one of the absolute highlights. And next day we
got to Rally Alba yet.
Where did we go after that?
We came up to Torino, no?
We did. I don't remember much of that journey.
I don't remember that at all.
I must have been typing. When I wasn't driving, obviously.
Yeah. We discovered something. You're now consigned to the back seat to type. Why are you consigned to the back seat to type?
I can't remember.
Because I was in fear of you cutting yourself in half and the airbag went off.
That's right, yeah.
Listen, folks, this is actually something really quite serious. You shouldn't have anything on your lap in the front of the car. And David had his laptop open. And I had images of us maybe having a little crash. And the airbag exploding into the laptop and forcing the laptop straight through him and cutting him in half.
Inevitably in a bad way. We went straight to that lovely restaurant. I've got no idea what the name of the place was.
I can't remember even the restaurant now.
No, it was nice. It was where we met Nicoletta from Hyundai. The Macaluso ladies.
Macaluso Foundation.
Yeah. I mean, that was a great lunch. And then, how much do we talk about this, though? Massimo. The Gino Macaluso Foundation. Yeah. Maybe not. Let's save that for another podcast.
Have a look it up, folks, if you want to know a little bit
more. No, don't look it up. Go on to... Is there not a story on Dirtfish yet? There's one coming. Don't look it up. Wait for our story, which will be with you shortly. And then wait for Colin's unbelievable video. Have you done a video?
I thought you did
a video. Has that gone out?
With Massimo Macaluso.
Massimo Macaluso. What a lovely fella he was.
What a fantastic fella. And stole
on his holidays
every
now,
car in the collection.
On his holidays driving around Italy.
In his Stelvio.
Stelvio. Yeah. Some car collection. So
he might get back if he's lucky in the Stelvio. I'm a huge Alfa fan. But, you know, he might if he's lucky get back. David, we're going through this chronologically now. So let's go on to the rally.
Supergra. Supergra.
Let's move on. What are we talking about now?
We went for supper with Mr. Adamo.
Again, a really nice invitation. And we were very fortunate because that was very much the team, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Because Oit was there, and what wonderful form Oit was. He was so relaxed.
He was. He was very good form.
Adamo was more relaxed than
anyone. Do I remember talking about Teletubbies with Oit?
We talked about Teletubbies, Yeah,
that was. I'm not sure who was more alarmed at that conversation, but he got it and he enjoyed it. It was a great night. But it was, I think, you know, we almost have to say this podcast, these videos, everything has been brought to you in association with Andrea Adamo. This trip was Andrea's idea. And we have to say, joking aside, massive thanks. You know, he provided us with a car to drive around in. And he gave us these opportunities.
Introduced us to some quite remarkable people.
Astonishing people.
Yeah.
I mean, we forgot. Oh, no, we didn't get to that bit. Sergio Limone.
We're not there yet. That's tomorrow.
No, genuinely, Andrea, if you are listening, and everybody at Hyundai, Nikki, Thomas, thank you so much. It was amazing. The supper was fabulous. Didn't really enjoy the walk up the hill. afterwards to go and see the view from the top of the...
I think Adamo said it was 200 metres. It was probably more like 500 or 600.
Yeah, it was bloody miles. It was a steep,
big, steep hill, wasn't it?
And it was midnight and it was 30 degrees still.
It was just... It was vile. It was humid. It was horrible, wasn't it?
Most difficult moment of the entire trip. Remember what happened when we got to the restaurant? What did I have to do in front of the entire Hyundai
team? Take your jacket off.
No, I had to reverse the car up onto that curb.
Dude.
Very challenging bit of driving in front of
Tanak and Sordo and I was
exactly.
watching.
Yeah, they were all there. But no, brilliant. And next day was into...
Breakfast at Tiffany's?
No, it was breakfast at Adamo's.
That was great. There's a video coming out. When will that
another
come
video
out?
Come out? I
probably
don't know.
Before the podcast, or maybe around about the same time as the podcast.
Yeah. So that was great. And just an amazing place that, you know, this guy is, he eats, sleeps and drinks rallying and his
home reflects
that.
I thought I knew pretty well, David, but, you know, we did, it wasn't just breakfast at, you know, the team hotel.
We didn't actually get breakfast.
No, that was actually...
We were undersold on that one.
Yeah, we were, but we got coffee. But it was at his apartment in Torino. And, you know, the apartment told you all you need to know about the guy. He absolutely... lives for rallying. You know, it was 100%. Full of, as you say, manuals and annuals and magazines and books. And then, you know, it was just nice to see the inner sanctum of his apartment, which is his little workshop he's got there.
You know,
and it's, everyone needs something to just take them away from the strains, the stresses.
What's yours, Carl?
The pressures. What's mine?
What do you do? How do you take yourself?
I don't have a stressful life. I deliberately, as you know, David, I deliberately engineer my life to be like that because, you know, you never know what's around the corner. And I'm not driven by having to be the very best at everything and earn
clearly
lots and lots of money and all that sort of stuff. But my escape's coffee. Genuinely, it's coffee shops. And I like to take myself to the coffee shop.
We saw a great coffee shop this morning, didn't we?
Well, didn't we, just?
That was a fabulous coffee shop.
We kind of fell into that one via TripAdvisor.
Brilliant.
But yes, being shown into this workshop and... He builds model cars, and it's the detail in these cars
that's
is phenomenal.
Yeah.
But as he said to us, you know, he can switch off for a couple of hours.
But you know, it's not. We've all had a go at building model aeroplanes, model cars. He doesn't just build them. He then evolves that model. Mm. You know, he was saying that there were some cable ties that weren't in the original kit, and he knew that there were cable ties and things on this bit of. And he makes them. He makes those individual parts. And the McLaren that he's working on now, he wanted the next evolution or some upgrades that were applied to that car. So he's designing and making those himself.
Yeah.
The man's just incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible. So, and then we went to a press conference in the center of Turin for the Piedmont region, which was sponsoring Danny Sordo's car, which was great, but just hot again. Hot.
It was, you know, 37, 38 degrees in the center of a city.
Mm.
It was the humidity. It was actually a little bit of a concern for the rally, you know, in terms of not so much the performance of the cars, you know, because if the cars keep moving, they'll be fine. But in terms of the, you know, the physical pressures on the drivers.
And we spoke to Thierry today and he said it was, you know, it was hard work yesterday.
But it did cool down a touch. It cooled down a touch for Sunday. And it's cooled down even more today. Today's Monday.
Yeah, but everything's relative. You know, at times it was still piping yesterday. But Thursday night, what did we do Thursday night?
Well, come on, we've got to get on to Sunday because the rally happened on Sunday.
Okay, right. Well, let's just skip. Thursday night was another
Thursday night.
It was another dinner. The Piedmont dinner.
We've eaten a lot.
We have eaten.
It's always
huge
been, and it's partly your fault. It's always been three courses.
It has. That's
always.
Problem,
every night it's been three courses.
Friday, what did we do on Friday? We went to the rally. We went to Alba.
We did. That's right. Was that not? That was Thursday evening.
Yeah, we were there. What did we do on Friday?
I can't remember.
We were already talking about it. We went back into Torino.
Into Torino. To Lingotto.
Lingotto.
And again, that was my second thing I've been sad about. Because you have this...
What was the first thing?
First thing was the fact that
industry.
The industry's gone.
Yeah. But is this not interlinked with that?
It is interlinked with it. But Lingotto itself is a beautiful, you'd almost call it an art deco factory.
What year was it opened?
It was opened in 1932.
1923.
I got the threes and the twos around. I'm dyslexic. You're having a go at me because I'm dyslexic. not dyslexic. And I'm sorry to make fun of, and I'm not making fun of anyone that is. I know it's a terrible thing.
That it's not dyslexia, that. It's something, when you numbers, it's not.
It's not dyslexia, you're right. It's
number.
Number blindness or something.
Something. Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, so we went to the Lingotto building, which I was, I did a little bit of research before we went, and was quite fascinated to read about the design, and the designer who actually designed it was a very young lad with some really forward-thinking ideas in terms of production, in terms of efficiency of production, in terms of just-in-time production, almost Japanese, before the Japanese started producing anything. And he designed this incredible building where the raw materials went in on the bottom floor, and the finished car came out on the top floor, five floors up, and it just went around
the building
and up, around and up, around and up, around and up.
And it was slowly being built.
And on the fifth floor, you have your finished car and you want to test it. So how do we test it? Do we bring it out the factory? No, because...
That's inefficient.
Well, it's inefficient. And what we want leaving the factory is the tested product.
Mm.
So on the very top of the fifth floor, we build a test track. Yeah. You have that iconic test track there.
That featured in
it is the most beautiful building just to look at. If you didn't know the history of it, you would still stand back and go, that's a beautiful building.
But it
was sad, David. It was sad. We went through car parks that were empty. We went through tunnels that were empty.
And this isn't a coronavirus thing.
No, it's not a coronavirus thing.
It's a rundown
shopping centre on the ground floor, which is, well, it seemed better days, that's for sure. There were a lot of boarded up buildings. There were offices that looked as if they were empty.
It was tired.
The outside still looked magnificent. The inside was tired. But what I found most distressing was
the fact that the roof was shut and we couldn't get
it. The roof was shut. What I found even more distressing than that was that there was not, that I could see, you did eventually point one out to me. There was not a single reference to Fiat that we could find.
But then we have discovered there was a separate building that's next to the actual Lingotto factory that is still the Fiat Chrysler Automobiles, not headquarters, but
it doesn't say anything. There's one sign. Yeah, but you didn't.
When I left you and you had a McFlurry in the shopping centre, and I said, I'm going to go and have a walk right around in
Bounty
probably McFlurry. By then it was about 48 degrees.
Yeah.
And I walked right around the front and there were some flags. I showed you a picture of the flags. Yes.
Right. Flags.
Flags. And a Fiat sign. But no, you didn't bother. You stuck to your McFlurry.
It wasn't a Fiat sign. It was a Fiat. It was when the building was built in 1923. It was embossed.
But
there was to the casual eye, there was nothing to say.
But did I mention at the time I went there with Marco Allen? Did I?
Well, tell that story again.
No, I won't.
Is that on the website yet?
I think it is.
That was kind of our day off, wasn't it? It was our one day that we had a little bit.
But it's
more
fair
time.
To say the reason that we kind of got interested in Lingotto was obviously it's part of automobile history, but also Fiat used to take their 124. The rally cars there, and they would shake them down a bit and test them on the rooftop.
Yeah.
And that's where, you know, Alain had these great memories of going up there and doing that. And why? So it was very sad that we couldn't get up there, renovating the restaurant on the top floor. And they clearly thought we were going to chuck ourselves off the top, so they weren't willing to let us go up there.
Well, I think you might have chucked me off rather than us chucking ourselves off.
No, there have been some low points at times, haven't they? You've largely only been singing.
You chucked a paddy today when I was writing the wrong sort of article It was a really good article.
It was not. No, let's move on. And Saturday shakedown for Rally d'Alba.
Mm. In the vineyards. That reminded me an awful lot of Rally Germany.
Did I go to shakedown?
No, you didn't. You were again writing stuff. So I went with Heike, our wonderful cameraman, to film. We both filmed. It was really good. But it did look it's a beautiful, we have to say, the Piedmont region, is that how you say it?
Mm.
The region is absolutely stunning. It's ancient.
Not as nice as Tuscany. Sorry.
I'm not sure I'm agreeing with you. Yeah. I liked it. It was beautiful. It was full of vineyards, very high up, some beautiful ancient mountain villages and towns. The architecture was just utterly stunning. The charm of the area just oozed charm. And I loved it. And as I say, Shakedown was through a stage that did look, it looked like almost Shakedown for Rally Germany, the times that we used to have it in the vineyards there. Yeah. And it was great. A lot of people, should we be concerned about that or not? Going back to our original conversation.
Let's not go back to that original conversation. Yeah, there were a lot of people, and now, you know, they blah blah blah.
Five things we learned about Shakedown is I learned one thing about Shakedown. Yeah, remember I wrote a piece. Five things I learned about Shakedown, and then learned the biggest thing: never make assumptions.
Oh wow! Yeah. You were taken to task by
Mr. Adamo.
Yeah, he's quite right. Everything. You assumed no. I was surprised. It was a pretty ridiculous assumption. This is one thing that sometimes, Colin, you miss is the ability to put things in context. You saw Roy Tanak out there doing run all the time in Shakedown.
Eight runs.
And you thought, we can't get comfortable in the car.
Well, no. That is not. I put together three or four different elements. So one was the number of runs. Two was his fastest time. Three was his demeanor. So there were three things I put together. Three things.
Yeah, but how long have we known Oit? And you know that when Shakedown starts, he gets his rally head on.
We interviewed him and he wasn't very happy. He didn't look comfortable. So what I said was that he still, the one thing that we'd learned, one of the five, was that he still wasn't comfortable in the I-20. I still kind of think maybe he wasn't entirely comfortable.
Yeah, but he wasn't comfortable because he'd never driven on tarmac before.
So by saying he's not comfortable was actually correct.
No, you were saying he was finding comfort and he found comfort.
So, from Shakedown, probably still wasn't comfortable and needed the 100 kilometres of the rally to find comfort, as you're saying.
He did, and then he got to the rally, and then we did.
I was only 50% wrong.
Yeah, all right, fair enough.
But Mr. Adamo said it was wrong, so if he said it was wrong,
you were completely wide of the mark. The rally itself was great. Three loops of three stages, and it ran like clockwork.
You have to take your hat off again to the organizer.
Number of cars.
I looked at it and thought 160 cars, 160 entries.
I mean, that's ridiculous.
Three stages looped. So, you know, a shortish loop, 34 k's in the loop.
Yeah, came back to Albert and 45
minutes back
service.
The same road. And it was just all day long, a constant stream of cars, going out to stages or coming back to stages. But, you know, I don't know. I didn't look beyond the top 15 or 20. I don't know if there were any incidents within the stages, but if there were,
well, it couldn't have been because
it ran. I think the first stage was delayed by
5-10 minutes.
I think it was 7 or 8 minutes. They got that back, and then it ran to schedule for the rest of the weekend or for the rest of the day. And it was great, and it was great to see Thierry Neuville where we expected him to be. Tanak,
did we expect him to be there? I mean, given that he hadn't competed,
when we talked about this earlier, you said, yeah,
oh, did I?
You know, disagreeing with yourself,
I don't know.
Well, yeah, you said.
But he hadn't competed since Mexico. And he hadn't he'd done that test in Finland.
So what was his competition? His competition was Tanak, who you've said still learning the car, rightly so. And you are right, he was still learning the car. His first tarmac rally, because we don't count Monte Carlo as a full tarmac rally. And he didn't even get many kilometres in Monte Carlo.
And Thierry, you know, by his own admission, from the first metre, he found comfort in the car, didn't he?
Didn't struggle at all with the car. And what we've seen in the past with that Hyundai is that it sometimes takes a little while to get the setup right on it. And they have this very strange oversteer-understeer problem. What we've seen with Neuville is he can cope with that. What we saw with Mickelson, he absolutely couldn't on tarmac. Neuville has managed to find a way of coping with that. And he looked comfortable and he looked happy. That's the main thing. He looked really, really as if he was enjoying himself.
And won 8 of 9 stages.
Yeah.
Or he won the other one.
What was encouraging for Tanak is that, you know, they did make change as the day went on. They were able to do that.
By the final loop.
And they made progress. He was much closer, wasn't he?
Yeah, absolutely.
Lube was consistent and wasn't a million miles behind.
No, and don't forget, I mean, in the second loop of stages, he had a spin. Mm-hmm. Took a bit of time. And, you know, in those roads, you know, we drove some of them, didn't we? Super narrow, unbelievably narrow.
And other places, super fast, still super narrow.
Yeah.
You know, but for me, the Lube was for me, a little bit of a revelation over the past 12 days. Because you know, we've seen him around for a few years now, and he's come through the ranks. And he's
WRC2
well, he
champion
he
last
won
year.
Yeah, exactly.
But he never stood out.
He's never set the timesheets on fire.
No. He's never been the Kalle-Rovanperä of his time, has he?
But my goodness me, we have seen the history of junior drivers or younger drivers progressing into World Rally cars since 2017 has been very checkered. One or two, Rovanperä, one has managed to absolutely nail it. Other young drivers have failed woefully. Lube looks really quite comfortable. And I think the most encouraging thing from Lupe was that he impressed the boss. Mm. Adamo spoke effusively
about him.
About him.
Yesterday he did. One thing I'd just throw in there is that, you know, don't forget where Lupe's from. And this, you know, yeah, these
similar roads.
These similar exactly roads. Similar roads. Mm. So, you know, let's stick him on a bit of gravel somewhere and see. I'm sure, you know, his pace will be there or thereabouts, yeah. And he's definitely a star for the future.
Yeah.
But yeah, that no, was great.
What was the other stand-up performance?
Breen. Absolutely.
Breen.
Every day. Just brilliant in Rome and utterly superb. Genuinely, I mean, was apprehensive. You know, he was up against Danny Sordo, Jari Huttunen, and some good R5 drivers here.
Good R5 drivers. Huttunen was a surprise.
Rally 2 drivers.
We'll get used to it. I know we have to. I know it's the new world. I know we have to, and I will get used to it at some point. Huttunen was a surprise for me. But, you know, these are drivers who are all potentially in with a realistic chance of a world rally season. Mm. We don't think Bob's going to be around. We don't think Sordo's going to do a full season.
So there is an opportunity. There's half a seat potential, isn't there?
Half a season, or there could be.
Half a seat for a whole seat for half a season.
It could be a third of a season between three drivers. Who knows? Yeah. Who knows how it might work? But so there was pressure on the youngsters there, and I suggest maybe pressure on Sordo. Although Sordo clearly isn't at the same. He's not at the same point in his career. He doesn't have to.
No.
The only pressure on Sordo is that everyone expects him to be the man.
Yeah, but equally, what's great about Danny is that he's not bothered.
He's not bothered.
He said to us at the end of the first loop. You know, people want to come out here and say they've beaten Danny Sordo. Well, good luck to them. Yeah. You know, he's
not going
to
change his life. Is it?
It's absolutely not. And he'd come from a world car 6 days before, and then he was into an R5 car. It takes time to play yourself back into that. And Danny did a solid job. He didn't do a great job. He did a solid job.
We're talking about Sordo. No, he didn't do a great job. You're right.
Huttunen did a very good job. Huttunen surprised me a little bit. You know, a Finn going that quickly on tarmac was very, very good.
Beat some very, very good local drivers.
Yeah, he did. But, you know, yeah, absolutely he did. And, you know, you can't take that away from him.
Didn't make any mistakes.
But Breeny, just great. And gets an even bigger mark for his dad buying us some whiskey in the bar last night.
I have to have a wee chat with you about this, Dave.
You were the one that wanted the whiskey.
I don't drink. But the pressure on me this last 2 weeks.
You've drunk a lot.
One night, I had a few. Yeah. I have quite enjoyed the odd beer.
Glass of wine, whiskey.
No, I've not drunk much wine. I had a few that night out, I did.
A couple of nights with a reasonable chunk of wine.
But last night, the pressure for me to drink that whiskey was intense.
It was. Yeah.
And then the pressure to drink the second one was even more intense.
It was. But I think we need to say great stories, but the one genuinely sad thing about yesterday was the news that Brian Patterson had passed away. We found out on Sunday afternoon, massively sad news, and just came from as a bolt from the blue. Brian and Liz have been at the centre of everything in British rallying, you know, for my entire life, as long as I can remember, always looking for the rally news. And just when I started at MN in 96, they totally took me under their wing when I went to Ireland for the first time. I hadn't got a clue. You know, to me, flying to Ireland was a hugely big deal. And they completely looked after me. And Brian, you know, I would trail him around and just hang on his shoulder and listen to it. And he was brilliant. And just somebody, you know, you have these people, don't you, that you think that'll be a good night. And every night with Brian and Liz, it was always a good night. There were so many stories and just a genuine, massively hardworking man who will be very much missed. And you've got to say to Davey, to Chris, to Michael, to Jody and Liz, and, you know, the whole family, it's a massive loss. And the emotions yesterday afternoon were raw when we heard about it.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. And he was an absolute trailblazer. Yeah. Trailblazer for media, rally media.
Yeah, you know, potentially the first stage end reporter.
Yeah, and I think what will bring a degree of comfort to, as you say, to Liz and the boys, is the really outpouring of sentiment today. Yeah. It's been actually quite uplifting to read some of it, and it's been, you know, it's everywhere that you've read any social media, full of people telling stories and paying tributes to Brian, and you know. Yeah, as you say, a bolt from the blue and very, very sad. Mm.
It was. It absolutely was. And so, yeah. And then we arrived at today and a ride with Mr. Neville.
It was a kind of, it was supposed to be a kind of quiet day where we were going to take it easy, wasn't it?
No.
It turned out to be that way.
When
I have to say, I have to tell you something. I'm going to admit to breaking the law right now.
Mm-hmm.
But this road that we were on for this test with Thierry, not a test, a drive day with Thierry, not a typical road round here. Very, very narrow. I think it was a farm road, effectively, wasn't it? Very bumpy. Had some
it was what it went up to the vineyards, didn't it? Up so it was essentially for harvest.
But really, in most places, barely wider than the car. So very, very narrow. And quite an ascent up to the top, turn around 2.5 k's, come back down again. It was wet. When I did my run, it was slippery. In the final straight, and there was one straight, big jump, and just and he just took sixth gear, just over 160 kilometres an hour.
On a road that's
on a road
that's as wide as a car.
With a wall on one side, a cliff on one side, trees on the other side. When we're coming to because we're at where are we? Somewhere still in Italy, Milan Airport. Sitting on the motorway, and I don't normally like to drive too fast. But that's really quite fast. That's really quite fast. I'm going to have to look down 160 kilometres an hour.
On a three-lane motorway.
On a three-lane
motorway.
Else. And I knew I was going really fast.
Yeah.
Whereas 2 hours earlier, I'd been doing that speed.
I've got to say, you
it
know.
It is incredible.
We've both been lucky enough to sit in a lot of cars with a lot of very, very good drivers, but it's been probably a year or so since I was in anything remotely as quick as that, but that raised the level today. I haven't done a tarmac test for probably a bit longer, but it was astonishing.
Well, first time I've been just in a new generation World Rally car, and the nimbleness of the car was phenomenal. The way it cornered was just incredible. And do you know what I noticed? And okay, Thierry had maybe heard the stories about me and was being a little bit gentle. But any time I've been in a rally car before, it's been utterly brutal.
But I thought that was brutal today. It was
seemed,
brutal on the brakes.
It's more progressive.
But I think the difference was you were in the wet, and it had to be more progressive.
Right.
Whereas when I was in it, it was not dry, but there were sections where it was a little bit drier, and you could lean on the tire a bit more. I genuinely thought it was the most brutal car I'd been in.
But you know what I found interesting, and you know Thierry is such a lovely guy, and he clearly was. It was quite incredible. He was talking us through the stage, but he was concentrating. He was driving reasonably hard, but he said, If that had been in competition that stage, he said, would not have been going an awful lot quicker.
Quicker.
He said, maybe over the course of 2.5 kilometres, 2 seconds quicker.
Because, we should just explain there that we were quite late in the day, so he'd run the stage probably 10 times, and he knew exactly where he was going, so he didn't need pace notes, and it was only 2.5 k.
He knew where the grip was changing. He knew, you know, he didn't need a gravel crew because he knew. He knew where the
road. He was evolving the road, wasn't
exactly.
he, essentially? But
it was a phenomenal experience. And you know, last time I was in a World Rally car, that was also a Hyundai with Hayden Padden in Finland. Okay, Finland.
You squealed like a pig, didn't you?
No. I'm not. You know, too big to say that. I was genuinely terrified.
In fairness, that moment with Brendo.
Brendo shook me up a fair bit. Yeah, poor old Brendo.
If you want to see why, then just
on.
Google Brendan Reeves, Colin Clark.
Crash.
Australia. But you, I mean, that was your fault, that crash. 100%
why
you
is everything my fault?
Ask yourself that question.
It's been a long 12 days.
Ask yourself that question. Look yourself in the mirror and say, why is it my fault? It was. But I think I've got to say now, it is now 11 o'clock. How long is that?
51 minutes.
Seriously, we said
we're
going to do 15.
We were going to do half an hour, and we've been through every single day chronologically.
It's almost as tiring as the actual trip itself, isn't it?
The trip itself was exhilarating.
It was.
It was energising.
Was it?
Exciting.
It was. I've got
to
say,
dynamic. It was.
We've taken a while planning this trip, and the stuff that we have seen, the people we've met, the people we are
cars
undoubtedly,
we've seen.
The cars we've seen, and just
Mr. Limoni.
Incredible. And just, you know, going around this place, this amazing country, and this, let's take it right back. It is very sad that for years, Northern Italy was at the very powerhouse of the WRC with Fiat, with Lancia, and all of these, Fulvio Bacchelli and exactly. And, you know, the likes of Sandro Manari, Mickey Biasion. And it is sad to see where it's going, and it needs to change. But there we are. Is that done? Can we go? I was going to say, can we go to bed now?
We were going to put a little podcast in.
Can we go to our separate beds now?
And we are. We were going to put a little piece in. We did quite an interesting little chat with Andrea Damo and Richard Milner yesterday. Two opposing team bosses, they get on very well. But do you know what? They understand what it's about. They understand what the WRC is about. And they know that it's fiercely competitive. But they also know that they have common goals and that they can work together to achieve those common goals. We will play that little piece. It's about 7 or 8 minutes. We'll play that next week for you because it was very entertaining.
And it is, you know, it's good to see the energy that those two generate when they're together. And it's good. Shame that we couldn't have Tommy McKinnon with us. We'd have had the full house of team principals, but there we are.
Yeah. Well, listen, folks, do you think I'm wrapping this up? Or do you think Lise will wrap this up for us? Over to you, Lise.
Over to you, Lise.
Bye-bye.
Arrivederci.
Arrivederci.
Should we play the music now? Shall I?
Sing.
No. Ooh, is that a phone ringing?
Oh, jeez, David. No. Did you jump up from your seat and stretch something?
No.
Jeez.
That
was a bit energetic.
Was it? It was for
this time of night.
Did you say old? I'm not old. Right, just bear with us a second. Ooh. That's because I've had it.
Telephone on again.
Yeah. Here we go. It's which one? I've got my lenses in, so I can't really see properly.
I thought the idea with lenses was that they helped you see.
There we go, look.
Arrivederci, folks.
Arrivederci. We're not going to get done by Rigoletto for using
this. No, you're not going to get done by Verdi for doing that, David Evans. But there are very many other copyright infringements. And that's as much as we are going to play.
I know Verdi's not
really.
This
is what happens when these two are allowed to get up to their own devices. But the power of post-production means that I can just fade them away before they have any more really good ideas. Like,
one way to end this.
You see, this is it. It's not even Christmas. It's August and they're playing all this. You have been listening to Spin the Rally Pod Rome Edition
time.
With senior staff writer for dirtfish.com, David Evans, and the voice of Rally, Colin Clark. Thank you very much. The whole team will be back together for the next episode, which means George and I will rejoin the dynamic duo. If you want to get in touch, at Dirtfish Rally on Twitter's one really good way. And if you want to subscribe, why not click on the button now on your podcast provider's site?